WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports. Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Welcome to another fantastic edition of Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this hump day, Wednesday, November 5th. So glad you've allowed us to be a part of your Wednesday afternoon. We got a hot show in store for you all today. We've got not one, but two guests for you. That's right. In just a moment, I'll be talking with Ernie Boone. Yes, Ernie is the man with the plan, folks, of the Michigan Bulletin. We're going to dive into MSU football, MSU basketball, and so much more with him. Then after Ernie, we're going to talk with Nick Archer, the head coach of the back-to-back state champion East Lansing boys soccer team. And we've got some hot debate topics for you, folks. We'll be talking about the Adrian Peterson saga. And if you've been following Adrian Peterson, you know that he has decided to take a lesser charge, no jail time for him. And there is a chance that AP could be back on the football field this season, folks. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, here's my man Jock DeWitt with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
This is Jock DeWitt here to bring you the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Wednesday, November 5. The MSU Union announced that ESPN will have a live broadcast of its First Take show from 10 a.m. to noon on Friday. The show will take place in the MSU Union and feature hosts Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, and Kerry Champion. MSU football coach Mark D'Antonio and basketball coach Tom Izzo are among the show's special guests. Michigan State redshirt junior defensive end Shalit Calhoun was named one of 12 semifinalists for the Rotary Lombardi Award, which goes annually to the nation's best offensive or defensive FBS lineman. Calhoun has been named a midseason All-American, and he's also on watch lists for Walter Camp, Chuck Bednarik, and Bronco Nagurski Awards. Mississippi State, Florida State, and Auburn held the top three spots in the second college football playoff ranking, with Oregon joining them in the top four Tuesday night. Oregon defeated Michigan State in Week 2, 46-27. The Memphis Grizzlies have signed former Michigan State guard Kalen Lucas. Lucas played 8 preseason games for the Grizzlies, averaging 3.1 points and 1 assist before being waived on October 25th. Lucas won the Big Ten Player of the Year in 2009 while helping lead the Spartans to an appearance in the national championship game. The Red Wings fell 3-1 to the Senators in Ottawa last night. Detroit's woes lately can be blamed almost entirely on their failure to convert on their power play chances. Last night they were 0-3. Their next matchup is tonight against the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. The Howe family released a statement yesterday saying that Mr. Hockey is recovering at a remarkable rate, including his speech and ability to walk with the assistance of a walker. They also said Gordy has been truly moved by the countless phone calls, letters, emails, and posts, as well as the Red Wings' Get Well gesture during their game against the Los Angeles Kings on Halloween. The 0-3 Pistons will face the New York Knicks tonight at 7:30 at the Palace. Stan Van Gundy, following their loss to the Nets after shooting 1 of 17 from behind the arc, said, quote, "Obviously 5.9% isn't going to get you anywhere. A lot of that is on me, because I still don't have a handle on what this team can do offensively." The Pistons are currently 0-3 for the fourth time in 5 seasons. NASCAR handed down punishments Tuesday to those involved in a post-race scuffle at Texas Motor Speedway on Sunday, but Brad Keselowski, Jeff Gordon, and Kevin Harvick were all unpunished. However, Gordon's crew chief, Alan Gustafson, was fined $50,000 and put on probation for the next 6 Sprint Cup races. Casey Kane's crew chief, Kenny Francis, received the same punishment. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Let's get it, Al.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jock. Let's get it, baby. I like that. That was hot. That was hot. Again, that's Jock DeWitt with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Wednesday, November 5th, folks. So much taking place in the world of sports. So, hey, how about Kalen Lucas, man? I haven't heard that name in a while. Kalen Lucas, I tell you. I mean, not taking the normal route to the NBA, but finally making his NBA dreams come true. Signing with the Memphis Grizzlies. That's big stuff. Oregon now. How about them jumping to number 4 in the second released committee poll? And I think, you know, Oregon jumping to 4, hey, that's good for MSU, because now it makes that loss look even more credible now that you have a top 4 team beating you at that. So great stuff there. And guys, have you heard about Alex Rodriguez? I tell you what, he's just been staying in the news this week. Of course, you know, he served his punishment. But it's interesting because the Miami Herald reported today that reinstated New York Yankee slugger A-Rod admitted to the use of performance-enhancing drugs during a meeting with the Drug Enforcement Administration. Two sources confirmed the details of the Herald's report. The Herald cited a written report of investigation, and it goes on to some interesting details that says that Rodriguez told the DEA that he paid Biogenesis founder Anthony Bosch for testosterone cream, testosterone gummies, and HGH injections. Now, you know, according to the report, one such injection took place in the men's room of a Miami nightclub. And it goes on here, just because it's a very, you know, because Alex Rodriguez really got into detail in this report. The DEA report stated, quote, Rodriguez injected the HGH into his stomach. Rodriguez said Bosch told him the HGH would help with sleep, weight, hair growth, eyesight, and muscle recovery. Interesting stuff. Now, this marks the first time, this is why it is so big, folks, because this marks the first time that Rodriguez has admitted to using PEDs between late 2010 and 2012. Now, if you remember, in 2009, the Yankees third baseman admitted to using PEDs while with the Texas Rangers in 2001. So, yeah, if you thought that A-Rod's legacy or fandom or just overall reputation was tarnished before, this just digs that hole a little bit deeper. Not surprising at all. Now, again, Rodriguez, he had that 211-game suspension, which was reduced to 162 games. He was reinstated to the Yankees' active roster not too long ago, actually on October 29th. So interesting details concerning that. And I tell you what, this whole PED thing in the world of baseball and steroids, it's just not going to stop. I'm pretty sure there are many players who are using it right now. And the constant debate is, hey, should you just legalize steroids? I mean, that's the debate that constantly goes on. So that's some news from A-Rod there. And how about the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers, folks? I actually, you know, I got home last night and I was watching, you know, the NBA, you know, getting my daily NBA fix. And I happened to tune to the Los Angeles Lakers and Phoenix Suns game. And man, are the Lakers bad. I knew they were bad, but I didn't think they would go 0-4 to start, 0-5, excuse me, to start the year. This is the worst start in Lakers history since the 50s, folks. That's how storied this franchise has been, okay? One of the most coveted franchises in all of sports, not just basketball, but they are 0-5, 0-3 at home. They can't even take care of home right now. I tell you what, Kobe Bryant is you know, if you don't think that Kobe has still got it, the man still has it. You know, he was unbelievable. Kobe Bryant, I mean, he did all he could yesterday. But there's some interesting notes, research notes that I really was kind of, you know, kind of took me back when looking at the Lakers and how they started this season so far. Now, you know, Kobe Bryant, he had 39 points and 9 rebounds last night. He's just one of 5 players in the last 30 seasons to hit those benchmarks in their age 36 or older. So Kobe Bryant is certainly taking, you know, he's taking a boatload of the work simply because he has to. There is no one on that Lakers roster that can do what Kobe Bryant does, and there's really no compliment to Kobe Bryant on that team. Also, this is also an interesting stat here. Just how rare that performance was last night for Kobe, well, it's pretty unusual because he had 37 attempts and just 1 assist. 37 shots Kobe put up, and he had just 1 assist. So it's not like, you know, I'm just preaching to the choir here talking about how Kobe has no help. Also, Kobe doesn't even trust his teammates. 1 assist, my goodness. Now, that's only the third time that a player has put up at least 37 attempts with 1 assist or fewer since 1990, and Bryant has now done it twice. The only other This would be a great trivia question for you all. The only other is the great Michael Jordan. Yes, the greatest of all time. Michael Jordan, who put up 64 points on 49 attempts back in 1993. So, oh boy, it's ugly. It is really, really, really ugly for the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's so weird for me because, I mean, and for many of you basketball fans out there too, looking at this Laker franchise and how good they've had, the storied history they had, going back into the glory days of Shaq and Kobe, back to the days of Wilt the Stilt, to Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, this is a franchise that you know, when we talk about the Lakers, you talk about winning. You talk about excellence. And now, hey, I think the Detroit Pistons are better than the Lakers right now. So, my goodness, folks, it is bad in Lake Town. All right, folks, well, our phone lines will be open all the way until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls live here on the air to discuss anything that you want to talk about. I want to give a quick reminder that, yes, it is hump day. It is Wednesday. And each and every Wednesday, we tape Current Sports TV. That's right. And we invite all of you out there to join us at the WKAR TV studios right here inside of the Communication Arts and Sciences building on the campus of Michigan State, first floor, where tonight I'll be sitting down with a guy who I pretty much admired because I'm such a big Detroit Pistons fan. I've been admiring this guy for a while, especially back in 2004. It's Lindsey Hunter, folks. Yes, he's a former guard, former Detroit Pistons point guard who won that championship with that team, was a part of that team in 2004, the last championship that the Pistons won. Lindsey will be joining me tonight at 6 p.m. If you want to get a chance to meet Lindsey and to sit in on that episode, it's going to be a fun one, folks. Just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. And also, folks, you do not want to miss any Current Sports Radio episode now that you do in the first place. I know this is your favorite time of the day, okay? But you don't want to miss any Current Sports Radio show from here on out because, you know, I went to Athletic Communications, MSU Athletic Communications, earlier this week and picked up our tickets that we'll be giving away for each and every MSU hockey home game, each and every MSU men's basketball home game, and each and every MSU women's basketball home game. So we'll be starting that tomorrow. Yes, we'll be giving away a pair of MSU men's basketball tickets for this Friday night's game against St. Cloud State at the Breslin Center. If you want to find out how to win those live on the air, you do not want to miss tomorrow's show. Good luck to you all and throughout the whole season. All right. Well, let's get to our guest for today's show. I'm excited about today because we have two outstanding guests, folks. Yes, we're doing double duty today here on Current Sports. Later on in the show, we'll be chatting with Nick Archer. Nick is the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team. If you know anything about East Lansing boys soccer and have been reading the paper or watching TV, you know that the East Lansing boys soccer team has done something that has never been done in that school's history. And that's win back-to-back state championships. That's right. They did it this past Saturday. Nick Archer is going to join me on the show to talk about it. I got some breaking news here, too. Alex Shard is typing in my window here and says that Mylon Hicks will play Saturday. Mylon Hicks will play Saturday for the MSU football team. So breaking news there, folks. And that's kind of a nice segue into our first guest on the show, seeing as though we're about to dive into some MSU football discussion. He's certainly a friend of the show, a longtime sports writer, and he is very good at what he does. Ernie Boone, sports writer for the Michigan Bulletin. He's in studio with us. Ernie, my man, good to have you on the show.
Good to be here. I'm really geeked this week. This is why I'm still writing sports after more than 50 years.
Gotcha. This is after all these years. I mean, a week like this, with all of the attention that this game is getting, with all of the implications that this Michigan State and Ohio State game has, I mean, my blood is boiling as well, Ernie. I'm ready for it, man. Now, for you, when looking at this game now, Michigan State, Ohio State, this is a game that, for me, in my opinion, when looking at it, this will separate the men from the boys. All year, we've been seeing Michigan State and Ohio State handle their business week to week to week for the most part. They come in with the same record. They're both in the same conference within the Big Ten. Whoever wins this game is going to play for the Big Ten championship and possibly via a pretty solid case to make the 14 playoff. when looking at this game, Ernie, what intrigues you the most?
It's two teams that really are almost mirrors of each other. They had great offenses. You got two streaks on the line. Ohio State's got its 20-game streak on the line. Michigan State's got its 13-winning streak on the line. So that's – they both have great defenses.
Mm-hmm.
It's football.
Right. It's going to be a smash.
It'll be played on a Saturday night. It'll be cold. It's just going to be everything that we grew up thinking about football. It's all coming to head on Saturday night.
That is so
true. You got a great quarterback, two good quarterbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And this Ohio State kid, I love him. He reminds me of Jimmy Ray. And it's not just the 16 on his shirt either. He's a running back in a quarterback's position.
Right.
But he's like Jimmy, he can throw the football. He can truly throw the football. But he doesn't run like a quarterback. He runs like a running back. So, State's got their hands full. I mean, this kid will make things happen, and they're going to have to be able to contain him. They cannot let him beat him with their legs. They got to force him to beat him with his arm, and he's got a damn good arm.
Yes, he certainly does, Ernie. And, when looking at JT Barrett, I'm one of the ones, and I'll go on record to say it, and I did go on record to say it, when I heard that Braxton Miller had gotten injured for Ohio State, I came on here and said, oh my goodness, I can't see how this kid can come in here and, with all the pressure that comes with, with being the Ohio State quarterback, I just couldn't see Ohio State being in the running to compete for a Big Ten championship. Then this kid comes out of nowhere. Do you think, because Tywan Jones said it yesterday, Ernie, he believes that JT Barrett is better than Braxton Miller. Do you echo those sentiments?
It's mighty close. It's hard to say. But where did Miller come from? Mm-hmm. When he was a freshman. People talk about freshmen. These kids have been playing football since they were 6, 7, 8 years old. I mean, this kid said, 7 games in this? He's not a freshman. This kid is
He's a vet
a
now,
man.
Right?
Man, yeah. he came here as a man. So I had no doubts. He's got the same offensive line, and offensive lines make quarterbacks. Okay?
Right.
He's got the same running back. A running game makes quarterbacks. So if Braxton was in a position to take that team, then this kid's in a position to take that team.
He certainly is. Now, what do you think differentiates, JT from Braxton that really makes him, that propels him? What do you think attributes kind of separate those two?
I think he's a better runner. I think he's a better inside runner.
I mean,
I think that they run plays that are designed for him to run. And you didn't do that much with Braxton. Braxton ran off for the passing game a lot more than he did of something. But this kid can run the football.
He certainly can.
And, he throws very well, but he can run the football.
That is so true.
And that just puts a tremendous amount of pressure on any defense. Now, State's had, you have to give him credit. Narduzzi has been able to contain this kind of quarterback, and that's what you pray for as a Michigan State fan, that he'll be able to do that on Saturday night. It's a challenge.
Now, Ernie, one of the themes in yesterday's presser for Mark D'Antonio yesterday morning, one of the things that every media member in there, including myself, tried to poke the bear at was just how important this game is when talking about the history of Michigan State football. Now, you've been covering the squad for quite some time now, and you just said you're ready for this game. This is the game that you get excited about. I mean, if you're covering it, if you're playing it, no matter what, this type of atmosphere, this is what college football is all about.
Absolutely.
When looking at these two teams and this situation, what do you think makes this game different from any other game you've covered?
It's a qualifier for a national championship. We've never had that before. Mm-hmm. We've never been in a situation where you play this game, you got a lot of season left to play, but you lose it, you lost the national championship.
Right. That is true. So true. There's a lot of weight in this game. Now, when looking at Michigan State's case, let's say they do get past Ohio State. Again, I think they'll play in the Big Ten championship. If they win the Big Ten championship, how strong is the case for the Spartans to be in that 14 playoff? And I'm going to talk about the playoff itself in just a second, but MSU's chances, how strong do you think their case is if they get past Ohio State?
From my standpoint, if Michigan State wins out, you have to put them in that four.
You have to.
I think you have to put them. You know, the.
What about the Oregon struggles?
Everybody, Oregon's lost too, so everybody's lost a game. Mm-hmm. So if Michigan State wins out, they've only lost one game. You know, they're right there with an Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Right. That is true.
The only, you know, if Michigan State wins out or Notre Dame wins out, then you're in the bubble. But if Michigan State wins out and Notre Dame is not there, they're the best team in the Midwest. You're going to tell me you're going to have a national championship and the best team in the Midwest is not involved in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Insane. That would be.
It'd be a crime.
It'd be criminal. it would be criminal.
And you know there are many out there, Ernie, that feel as though the national outlook when it comes to college football, as far as the perception of the Big Ten goes, and any conference other than the SEC goes, many people feel as though the committee and those involved, and even the national media, have a sort of an SEC bias. Do you feel that is true?
I don't really have a bias. You know, the SEC teams play football. They have the name.
It's pretty safe to say that's the best college football conference in the nation, right?
You can't argue. You can't argue. Top to bottom, they may very well be the best.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me that a team like Ohio State, a team like Michigan State, can't play with those SEC teams. That's garbage.
Right. That is true. Very true. I agree. I agree with you. And I think looking at MSU, especially their defense, I mean, I always say defense wins championships. MSU's defense is so good. It could run with anybody, I feel as though. And you saw it even in an Oregon game when Michigan State had a 9-point lead at one point in the third quarter. The defense, they had a few mistakes that led to Oregon just kind of turning things up a notch and led to quick touchdowns, and they just kind of tried to climb themselves out of a hole then. But Michigan State will hang with you, and that defense alone puts them in contention against anybody. And then look at the offense. I mean, on Saturday, you have the opportunity now of seeing two of the most, and you talk about these two quarterbacks, two of the most high-powered offenses in the Big Ten going at it, and possibly a chance for a Big Ten championship here. It's going to be a fun thing to watch.
But two of the best defenses as well.
Exactly, yes. I agree. I totally agree with you. So it's going to be mano a mano. When looking at it, what do you think is going to happen, Ernie?
Well, you know, I never pick against MSU. I can't do that.
Right, right. So you're going with MSU.
It
won't even shake to say that, right?
Exactly. So I can't pick against MSU. So when I look at it, I say, what does MSU have to do to win?
And what is that?
If they can contain the quarterback, if they can keep him from making plays out of nothing,
right,
they win the game.
Well, that's going to be a key matchup. Folks, what do you think about this matchup? Call up 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Now, Ernie, I just really briefly want to talk about the playoff itself. This four-team playoff is a system that has been put in place. This is year one of this system, going against now the BCS Championship Series, which thank goodness is gone for me. I didn't like it in the first place. But, you know, with anything new, there are going to be their complaints.
Yeah, I don't like this system either.
You don't like the system.
No.
Why is that, Ernie?
Too few teams. Yeah. And it's taken away the one really big thing that it has turned conference championships into nothing.
It's meaningless, right?
And that's bad for football, I think.
Right.
I'd like to see them go to at least eight teams. I'd like to see them take the league champion from those five big conferences, throw in some independents, and go 12.
Yeah, I agree.
Do something where you settle it on the field. This won't sell it on the field. I mean, you look at what they come up with. You know, what, three SEC teams initially.
Yeah.
What would have happened if that were the playoff?
We'll be talking about basically an SEC conference championship,
yeah,
right?
We'd have been laughing. and nobody would look at it,
right?
Because no one would respect it.
Exactly.
But if you're going to talk about these five big conferences, them let their champions be in the running, and let it be determined by the champion. Here, look at we here right now. We got a game against Michigan State and Ohio State. Mm-hmm. The loser gets eliminated, even if the loser goes on and wins the championship.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's too small. Now, there was an interesting caller on the show that brought up a great point a few weeks ago. They talked about how the talk of this four-team playoff has really kind of birthed a life of its own. It's kind of become bigger than the game of college football itself. I can't turn on my TV or read the paper or turn on my radio without hearing some sort of chatter about the four-team playoff and who's going to be in it. Do you think with it being such, with only four teams making it, which makes it even more so important? Every game is important, but do you think the talk of the playoff has been overblown and has taken away the fun of watching college football in general?
No, it's not taking away the fun of watching college. I like watching college football, and I'll watch a great football game whether there's anything on the line or not.
Right, because you love it. But what about the overall spectrum, of people, that tune into it to watch it and don't watch it for just the love of the game. Watch it to see who's going to be in the championship at the end of the day. Do you think there's too much talk about the playoff this year?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much. I mean, but it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Because all this talk now doesn't mean anything until you get down the line and they figure out who the four teams are going to be.
Yeah.
Then the talk will really start because the team that's 5 and 6 and 7 is going to say, why not me?
Yeah. I just feel as though sometimes, I mean, it's like we're just beating a dead horse sometimes. It's like, okay, who's going to be in? The games take place every single week. And again, it's not about, like you just alluded to, the conference champions for everybody in the Power Five won't get rewarded for being. There's going to be somebody left out. You know what I mean? Somebody's going to be sitting at home with a conference championship and not playing for a chance at a national championship. And again, that's very, very unfortunate. So you can't even celebrate that moment of it because you're constantly saying what if, And I think that's why. But if you're going to do it, expand it to 8 teams, reward these conference champions. Totally agree with you on that, Ernie. Definitely. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Give us a call. We'll take your calls live here on the air. Really briefly, Ernie, want to talk about some MSU men's basketball. Of course, they opened the season this week against the Masters College, the return of Russell Byrd. This is a team that certainly has taken many people perceive as though they're taking a step back from last year. Last year, they came in preseason ranked number one. Obama chose them to win the NCAA tournament. This year, they're coming in the season ranked number 18th in the USA Today coaches poll. How good do you think this team will be, and what did you like that you saw from this team on Monday?
They can score the ball.
What's that?
They can score the ball, but they got to learn to play some defense, and they got to find a big man. Mm-hmm. You know, Costello, if he plays like he played some games last year, if he can do that consistently, so he'll give you defense inside, give you some rebounding,
mm-hmm.
a little scoring, run the floor. I really like the sophomore. What's his name?
Bryn? Yeah. Is it Bryn Forbes?
No, the big kid.
Oh, Gavin Schilling.
Schilling, yeah.
Gotcha.
I really like his development. He's
right.
He's a lot more aggressive. He's a presence this year when he wasn't much of a presence last year. So if he and Costello can work together and give you strong defense inside,
mm-hmm.
and give you some rebounding, okay. But they look really shaky.
You think they did?
They're so small.
Yeah, they are. They certainly are. And Tom Izzo talked about it in his media day presser how this team has to play better defense and rebound the ball. He said that, those are two things that when you talk about the Michigan State men's basketball team, those are two staples of what makes this program so good. They're going to rebound, not just from the big guys, but, they have guards that can rebound. How many story guards have we seen come through this program and be prolific rebounders? defensively, MSU is known to have that lockdown D to give teams, you know, problems on the offensive end. I mean, it's something that's going to be a growing process. But I do think this team is going to turn some heads. I believe we have a caller right now for you, Ernie. Tom from Lansing. How you doing, Tom? You're on Current Sports.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question for your guest and yourself is very simple. Do you think that collegiate football has outgrown the universities? The reason I ask that is we're going to start paying them. And then there's going to be agents. And then there's going to be, well, why can't I make commercials since I'm a popular player for your football team? And I see a can of worms has been opened that I think is going to require a restructuring of college athletics to the point where they're going to be more semi-pro teams than college teams, and I also think that's going to affect the audience that's interested in it. So I'd like to hear what your guests think.
Well, that can's not open yet, and I'm crossing my fingers that it doesn't get opened. We haven't started paying kids yet, and if we're lucky, we won't. If we start to pay our kids, it will change things tremendously. There's no question about that. That's why I'm hoping that we don't do that. I may be one of the lonely guys, but I still believe very strongly in amateur athletics as it
is right now. Tom, that's a very, very good question. And from my perspective, when looking at it, Ernie, it seems as though every single year money is being dumped into college athletics, specifically college football, because we're just talking about college football here. That's what Tom wanted to talk about. I feel as though that it, really college football, even college basketball to some degree, is taking on a forefront and a spotlight that we have never seen before. The TV deals, the amount of exposure these kids are getting, and you hear from all the time, because this has been an ongoing debate for I don't know how long, should college athletes be paid? They feel as though they're getting nothing. You know, they're barely living. That's what you hear from a lot of them. And you hear, you know, Todd Gurley the other day, you know, signing autographs for money. You know, it was a thing with Johnny Manziel. He got caught doing it. And it's one of those things where when you look at a college athlete, they are putting their blood, sweat, and tears in, hours and hours a day in. They feel as though they can't work a job. It's impossible to work a job. And they feel as though there should be some compensation for using some sort of their image. Now, for me, do I agree with it? Because I see you giving me a look now, Ernie. With laying all that out, I don't think that college athletes should be paid only if you are using their name or image for likeness that translates into moolah. If you're using my image, and that's why this whole O'Bannon case got so much headway, because, you know, ideally they were using these players on a video game that they were getting paid for, which wasn't right at all. So I definitely see it, and I do think, you know, just this college football in general is getting so much attention each and every year that the game is starting to become, it's starting to take a life of its own that mimics what the pros are. So I think we're gonna trickle down the road eventually where college athletes are going to get paid, Ernie. I think it's coming. I think it's just a matter of time.
Well, everybody keeps saying it's a matter of time. It hasn't happened. I'm working like, you know, I hope like heck it doesn't happen. You know, you say they're not getting compensated.
Scholarship.
First of all, they're getting a very expensive college education. That's one. Two, they're getting an opportunity to make big bucks. You know.
But that's very few, though, Ernie. The pros take the cream of the crop. They're not everybody makes it to the NBA or the NFL. You know?
That's right. That's why you go to class and get a college degree.
That's true too. I agree with you on that too. I don't think these athletes should be paid. But I do think we are approaching that era where they will.
Well, everybody keeps saying that.
But then you have the unionization situation at Northwestern, which is still, you know, being debated about in court. I believe it's being taken to the Supreme Court now. I mean, just imagine if that rule is in favor of the players. Oh, that can of worms is going to be open to the maximum, and I think it could see it, Ernie. Folks, what do you think about it? Again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking with the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team who have just won, not one, but two state championships in a row. The first time it's ever happened in program school history over at East Lansing. Nick Archer will be joining us right here on the show. Don't go anywhere. We'll return in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, we'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything that we're talking about on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We just chatted with Ernie Boone of the Michigan Bulletin, talked a little MSU football, a little MSU basketball, and a little shit college athletes should they be paid, all right? And he'll be sticking around with us. Ernie will be joining us to wrap the show in just a sec after our second guest, and I'm glad to get to him right now. He is the head coach of the now back-to-back state champion East Lansing boys soccer team. They had a heart-stopping, nail-biting, just unbelievable come-from-behind overtime win, 4-3, over Bloomfield Hills, Cranbrook, Kingswood in the Division II state championship game at Brighton on Saturday. It was the third overtime game in the 2014 state tournament for the Trojans, who also needed extra time to beat Haslett in the district semis and Mason in Wednesday's Division II state final. Oh boy, I'm pleased to have Nick Archer on the show with me today. Nick, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing pretty good, Al. Thanks. That's a great recap of the comeback kids.
I'm telling you, you guys, I mean, do you guys just like giving your fans a heart attack? What is it about these close wins?
I think they're trying to get back at me, but I'm not sure. they really came back, like we're saying there. They were down several times. They just have a tremendous heart and desire to, you know, the breakthrough and take the game all the way to the finish.
I mean, what do you tell your team, you know, Nick, in those moments when they're down and things are getting, you know, real, real chippy? And especially in a state championship game, a come from behind win, it goes to overtime. What were you telling your team? And did you sense any panic from them or any desperation from them at all? I mean, or were they pretty even keeled and calm?
You know, I didn't pick desperation or panic from them. We're just telling them to do what you can do. Do what you have been doing. That's what's got you here. We don't do anything different, but we got to do what we can do. You know, we can't try to do something too much different than we've been doing all season long. So they just had to get their A game out, and they pulled it out. Real proud of the guys.
Without a doubt, and deservingly so. Now, what were your thoughts when it went to overtime, and what did you tell them during that moment?
Not again.
Right.
You know, I basically said it's their own fault. We kept shooting ourselves in the foot. Now let's correct it and move on. So we made a couple game adjustments like we usually do, and to remind the kids of the basics of the game. And it's that you got to have the desire and the intensity, but yet still can be controlled. You know, that controlled intensity you got to play with.
Now, Nick, I mean, this is the first time that you guys have done this in program history. And, you have certainly a special group of young men out there playing for you. In your coaching career now, you are a longtime coach for the Trojans. Has it really hit you yet? And has it hit your kids at just how big this moment is? Has it hit you yet?
It's starting to sink in now a little bit. Before, you're just kind of running on adrenaline soaking up the moment. But it's starting to say that's quite an accomplishment for these young guys to be able to go back-to-back. So many things can go right, just like so many things, you know, so many things can go wrong, and so many things went right for us. So, you know, you played well, and yet sometimes you're a little lucky, but you got to have what you need there to keep going. You got to have that game intensity. You got to play your game and hope for the best, and you do need a little luck once in a while.
That is true. And, you know, I love asking this question on the heels of a championship game. How, what did you guys do to celebrate? What did you do as a coach and what they do as players?
I don't know what they did as players. I told them all to be good and use good judgment.
Right, right.
And they went to someone's house and just had a nice quiet time, I think. So the parents went out and they, you know, we did our thing and just kind of sat around and relished the moment and had a good time reliving the season. And we have our awards banquet coming up on November 11th, and that'll be another time where everyone gets together and rehashes the seasons and recognize the guys for a great job done.
Now, Nick, how have you been able to accomplish this now for back-to-back years? Are you doing anything different, or is this the same formula you've had for your long tenure as head coach of the Trojans?
Well, I think we all evolve a little bit, and we can't stay stagnant. You do have certain things as far as your how you handle the kids, your presentation type of thing. You know, you got to be you and do what you do. But you got to stay up with the times, the tactical adjustments, and the tactical evolutions of the game. You got to be current. You got to prepare the kids well. They got to be sound in the basics. You give them, you prepare them, and then you just hope for the best.
Nick, is this the most gratifying moment of your career as a coach?
You know, I had so many special times, and it's really hard to compare, some to the others. I've had teams that really did the best they could, and they weren't as successful, but I was so proud of them that what they did for what they had, you know. And I'm really, proud of these guys, too, and all the other teams that were able to, be successful. Success is not always in the end sometimes, but it's in what you put into it.
That is very, very true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Nick Archer, head coach of the back-to-back state champion East Lansing boys soccer team. So, Nick, you've been doing this quite some time now. What keeps you coming back to coaching every single year? And how many more years do you fathom you'll do this? I know you got to come back to sort of defend this thing and try to make it a three-peat, right?
Well, they said that last year, and I was thinking, well, each year is my last year. So, yeah, I'm at that point. My wife, Lynn, and I talk it over, and if the system says go, we go for it. I still enjoy what we do. I enjoy my assistant coaches. They're great guys. You got to give my compliments to them. Without them, I don't think we would be where we're at. They work hard. They prepare. It's not a, one-person show here. It's just great kids, great parents, tremendous support staff. And you put it all together, and sometimes you get lucky.
Well, hey, back-to-back, I don't know if I call that luck, Nick. But, so just to clarify, so you won't be coming back next year?
I didn't hear that, no.
So you are coming back next year?
I just said each year is my last year for the last 3 years.
Oh, you said that for the last 3 years then, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
We just kind of evaluate at the end of the season and, see where it goes.
Gotcha, so it's still up in the air then, huh?
It's up in the air now. That's all I can say. I really enjoy what I do and the company we have and the kids. And but eventually there is a time when everyone has to say that it's time.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick. I'm definitely hoping that you stick around at least to see if you can defend this thing and have a moment like we're having right now on Current Sports where we're talking about a three-peat. I tell you that. You're an outstanding coach. Now, for you, for those that don't know, Nick, I mean, when did the coaching bug bite you that led to this unbelievable run that you've had at East Lansing?
I think it hit me a couple years after I was hired in at East Lansing in 1970, and I played soccer with the kids, and they kind of enjoyed it, so we did it after school, and then we did it on Friday nights during the winter. And then they went to the high school, and they said, Coach, there's nothing going on over here. There's no soccer. So I said, well, let's see what we can do. And we were an intramural sport for a while. Then we were a club, and we went around the state playing different teams. And they said, well, you can only play 3 games as a club, Coach. And I said, 3 games? Oh, okay. And we're not even a varsity sport, but you can play 3 games. So I had about 50, 60 kids, so I divided them into 3 teams and played 9 games.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so we went around it that way. Well, they only played 3 games.
Right, right. Good stuff. So, I mean, when looking at it and coaching in general, what is it that you like the most, Nick?
You know, I enjoy the going to practice and what, you know, the teaching moments and the aha moments when the light finally comes on. Sometimes it's dull and sometimes it's bright and sometimes it doesn't come on. But
right.
Most of the time it does. And then I enjoy the atmosphere on game day. The preparation to that moment. And then if it's successful because they put into practice at the game, during the game, what they've put into practice during the practice days, then we're successful.
Now, looking at this team, of course, I was at East Lansing boys soccer practice not too long ago to do a profile on you and, of course, your outstanding player, DeJuan Jones. I tell you what, he's moving on now, of course, you know, as a freshman soccer player for Michigan State next year.
Yeah.
Have you given DeJuan any advice at all, Coach?
No, just day-to-day stuff. But I don't know if you're aware now, it just came out today that DeJuan was selected Mr. Soccer for the state of Michigan.
Hold on, can you repeat that for me, Nick?
DeJuan Jones is Mr. Soccer for the state of Michigan.
Wow, unbelievable.
Number one guy.
The number one soccer player in the entire state. My goodness.
You got it.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I'm flabbergasted right now. I had no idea. I mean, when you think about what DeJuan has done this entire season and the numbers he's put up and his leadership on the field that we talked about last week, I mean, how special is this kid, Nick?
Well, that's a pretty big deal. You know, DeJuan is certainly a deserving player. He's a clutch player for us. And he's our first Mr. Soccer, I believe, in the Mid-Michigan area. And we've had a very successful run here the last couple of years with the local teams, with the Yokomis, the Masons, the Williamson, the DeWitts. All have been very competitive on the state level, in the top 10. So I think it's appropriate that someone in this area came out, and I'm very fortunate that DeJuan, who was a very deserving soccer player, was selected number one.
When did you know that DeJuan was pretty good, Nick?
Well, you know, as soon as you see DeJuan, you know, he's pretty good. So, you know, we knew when he first came in that he was going to be, develop into a top-notch player.
Oh, that's great stuff. DeJuan Jones, I tell you, he's an unbelievable kid. If you haven't seen that kid play, folks, you'll get a rare opportunity to see him in Michigan as a freshman for Michigan State next year. All right, Nick, well, what are the chances, if you do decide to return next year, what are the chances of a three-peat, my man? I know you're probably not even thinking about it right now, but I just thought I'd throw it out there in the air.
Well, you can throw it out there, but, that's one of the last goals you have on your list of things that need to be done, a state championship. I tell the kids that, well, if that was up there number one, yeah, it's a nice goal, but if we don't do the little things, big things don't happen. So, yeah, it'd be nice, but that's not what we're looking at right now.
Hey, enjoy this one, okay, Nick? Gotta love it.
We are, Al. It was a great moment for East Lansing and the kids in East Lansing, the team, and we're enjoying it.
Nick Archer, head coach of the back-to-back state champion East Lansing boys soccer team. Nick, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Al. It's been a pleasure.
All righty. Oh, boy, that's great stuff. Again, DeJuan Jones, how about that? Man, that's Mr. Soccer right there for the state of Michigan. My goodness. All right, let's hit our second break. We'll wrap up the show after we come back, talking about Adrian Peterson pleading to a lesser charge. And we'll maybe even talk a little NBA action with you, all right? Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, about 10 minutes left in the show. Again, if you want to call in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls on the air up until 2. Also want to remind you all that it is Wednesday, and each and every Wednesday we tape Current Sports TV. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. I'll be sitting down with former Detroit Pistons guard and 2004 NBA champion, Lindsey Hunter. Lindsey, he is one funny guy, folks. and certainly brings a championship mentality to anywhere he goes. He was actually under Mark Jackson's coveted Golden State Warriors coaching staff up until Mark Jackson was, of course, let go by the team. Steve Kerr is now the head coach over there. Lindsey's a cool guy, though. If you want to meet him, come on out. It's going to be a fun taping tonight. All right, well, Arnie Boone is back with me here. How about that? DeJuan Jones, how much do you follow local sports around here, Arnie?
A little. A little bit. I follow soccer.
Yeah, soccer's a different realm. But I tell you what, this kid, DeJuan Jones, is so good, folks. He'll be taking his talents to Michigan State next year as a freshman. He's just been named, as you just heard from Nick Archer, the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team. He's just been named Mr. Soccer. Yes, the top boys soccer player in the entire state of Michigan. Man, the kid is good. The kid is good, folks. All right, we'll wrap today's show by talking a little bit about Adrian Peterson, folks. You know, it's crazy because you're looking at this story. Of course, Adrian Peterson, he got in a little bit of trouble due to a very socially hitting topic. And the reason I say that is because it was an issue, of course, off the field. It took place where it was released, and pictures were released and everything, where Peterson was indicted in September on a felony charge of injury to a child for using a wooden switch to discipline his 4-year-old son earlier this year in suburban Houston. Now, the All-Pro running back says he never intended to harm his son and was disciplining him in the same way he had been as a child growing up in East Texas. Now, the boy suffered cuts, marks, bruises to his thighs, back, and one of his, sorry to be graphic here, but one of his testicles. This is coming straight from the court records. Now, if convicted of a felony child abuse, Peterson could have faced up to 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. But, again, Adrian Peterson has decided to plead to a lesser charge in which he will avoid that jail time. And it's interesting to see the steps that now take place because the next Vikings game that could ensue could have AP back in the purple jersey in the backfield tearing it up back on the gridiron. Interesting stuff. Now, Arnie, you know, you and I were talking before this show, and, you know, I've had this discussion on the show before. When this first happened, when this first was released about Adrian Peterson whooping his child, I had said, and again, I give this same disclaimer, I'm not here to tell you how to discipline your child. You're a parent. I'm not even a parent. I don't even have a son or daughter to discipline. But I will say this, though. Me growing up, I used to get whooped all the time. I was a bad kid, Arnie. I used to get in trouble at school. I was the class clown in kindergarten. I mean, I wasn't nothing to mess with, all right? And I never forget, I really messed up in school with parent-teacher conferences. I had went to parent-teacher conferences, and you know, my kindergarten teacher is like, you know, oh, man, Alan Martin has just been, he's been a handful. He's always cracking jokes and not paying attention and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I went home that day, and my parents, they got into me. And you can pretty much, you know what getting to me means. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. And this happens, you know. Again, you know, I feel as though society over time, and again, these are just my own thoughts and opinions, folks. If you disagree with it, hey, debate, call in a debate, about, debate it with me. You know, whoopings are normal in my family. Whoopings are normal. Chastising is a normal thing. Now, granted, there is a fine line. There is a fine line. Anytime, you know, if you draw blood or if there's marks or something present, then yeah, okay. You know, okay, you may be going a little bit too far, and that's clearly what a lot of people felt in the Adrian Peterson case, so much so that this case blew up. Arnie, what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
If I got a dime for every time I had a whip on my butt, I could take a nice vacation. Mm-hmm. You know, physical spankings, you know, everybody in my neighborhood was told to go get a switch. You go pick your switch, and if you didn't get one that was big enough, you went back out to get one.
Right.
And the kind of marks that I saw in the pictures,
mm-hmm. on it for Adrian Peterson's son.
On Adrian Peterson, I had a ton of them. Mm-hmm. I don't have any scars now.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yes, it's a fine line, and you know, Peterson talks about his father coming to school when he was in high school and administering some punishment. So he's operating out of his own background and understanding. Now
the debated question here in this whole situation, Ernie, is it right at the end of the day to whoop your child? That's the question.
I think it's right. You know, I'm a Christian, and I like the Bible says, spare the rod, spoil the child. And yeah, you got to be careful about how you administer the rod. And one of the issues is just that. You know, Adrian Peterson is an exceptional physical specimen. Mm-hmm. So he has to be more than careful when he administers physical punishment because, you know,
he's not like me and you.
He's heavy-handed.
That's right.
It's the way my folks used to say, you know, he's heavy-handed. But it is most unlikely that his child was really harmed. Yeah, he got some whips on his butt, but they will heal, and there will be no scars, and there will be no mental scars. Because I can tell you most of the people I know got that kind of whipping as kids.
Definitely. And I agree.
And most of the highly successful people I know got that kind of treatment as a kid.
Right.
And they love their parents. They love their aunts and uncles who administered those whipping. So I think that we have to take into account where Peterson is coming from.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you, Ernie. And again, I went through it. I got my butt whooped as a child, you know, and I feel as though in today's society, in the realm we live in, I feel as though discipline is taking a step back. And the reason I say this is because I feel as though we've become so sensitive in so many regards. It's, and not even just talking about, you know, whooping your child, if it's right or not. But in other social realms that I won't get in right now because we got 2 minutes left in the show, I wish I could go on a huge rant right now. But I feel as though society has become so sensitive that everybody has to be very, very careful at what they do, because the moment you do something that kind of crosses that line, oh boy, you're going to get the whole book thrown at you. So it's interesting stuff. But I do believe that Adrian Peterson, considering the fact that prior to this, I mean, Adrian Peterson had been looked at as just a classy individual, a classy guy who had no problems off the field. I think he should be given a second shot. And I do think that you will see him in a jersey on NFL Sunday very, very soon. I do think he should be in that jersey. Ernie, what do you think?
I agree. I hope that he's playing just as quickly as they can let him play. It's unfortunate that it happened. He certainly has learned. It wasn't. You know, he knows now that he's got to be a little more light-handed.
There we go.
If he uses the hand at all.
All right, folks. What are your thoughts on? You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR_sports. I will read your comments live during tomorrow's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Shout out to Ernie Boone of the Michigan Bulletin and also Nick Archer, who is the head coach of the East Lansing boys soccer team. Outstanding guest, outstanding discussion. Great show, folks. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. Tomorrow, you'll get to hear a sneak peek preview of my sit down with Lindsey Hunter, folks. You don't want to miss that. Take care. Be easy, people. We'll